This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Sullivan, California, Flag Is Up Farms. And I have a cold. Sorry, guys. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April 10th, episode 1673, brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, horse world.
Monday, Monday. Can't trust that day.
I didn't know.
Well, it's your fault, so.
Behind our masks, we're perfectly ordinary people.
And now, our perfectly unordinary host, Jamie Jennings.
Really? Just remember, my friend, that payback can happen.
And Glenn the Geek.
I'd have to get new tights.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I have a cold. I was going to tell you all about my exciting adventure this weekend, cross-country schooling, and just all about the thrilling times that I created for myself here in California, and I laid in bed. I got nothing.
And I
hope you didn't budget time.
I remember listening 2 weeks ago when I was out, and somebody was filling it. It was Lisa Wysocki, and I remember the first 4 minutes of the show saying what a weenie baby I was. Here you are whining about having a cold.
Just continuing on about the weenie baby thing. Am I whining while I'm on the air, or am I whining while I took the day off?
Yeah,
see, oh, that's right. That was you who took the day off.
That is the distinct advantage to being the boss.
That's not fair. See, you can't give me hard time. I showed up.
It's nice to be the boss sometimes.
Every once in a while, it pays off, doesn't
it? Sorry, yeah, when you have to pay the bills, it's not so nice. But it is nice being the boss when you can say, I'm just taking off today. I don't have to go to work.
You're like, Jennifer, you're doing the show. I'm sick.
Right, I'm sick.
I'm a little baby.
You do sound terrible, by the way. Just thought of
Thank you.
Yeah, you're
That's
welcome.
That's a nice compliment.
You're welcome. Get you going on a Monday morning.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Jennifer, what is on
now, let's just clarify sick at Monty's house when you're staying in Monty's house. It's kind of a luxurious place to be sick. I'm just saying.
You know, I actually went and crashed in the bunkhouse because they have a TV. So I stayed in the dusty bunkhouse with all the girls coughing and blowing my nose on their couch watching DVDs.
And
there's no there's no actual TV. It's just DVDs. So I rewatched Notting Hill. I watched Love Actually. I watched, notice the theme, Bridget Jones. It was all like, it was a Hugh Grant romantic comedy 4-pack. So I watched that.
You know what I determined when I talked to you this morning? We should just never leave the house. Every time we leave the house, we get in trouble. We get sick. Something happens. We should just stay home.
Yeah. Oh, it's the time. You know what? It's springtime. Who cares? I'm going to make it. I've got work to do today. Today is the day that I am going to calmly halter Private and remove him from the chute, the gently chute myself, and teach him to lead. He's going to be amazing. And my little sweet precious has learned some tricks, which I cannot tell you about. Did I tell you that at the end of this whole thing is it's almost like a road to the horse. You have to do a demo with your horse, and mine is Precious. And so I'm teaching Precious some special
I saw
tricks.
Some pictures of Precious over the weekend where she was straight up in the air. I assume you've overcome
that.
No,
that's Private.
Oh, that was Private?
Yeah, and so that hopefully will be overcome today.
Okay.
So, yeah, when you see the pictures of Private on his hind legs, spinning around, trying to exit the facility and kick you on the way out, that's going to be he's going to be a new sweet angel baby today.
It was so funny because in one of those pictures, you can see in the back the jail cells that the humans stand in so as not to get hurt while you're in the middle of the ring trying to get hurt.
Somebody's got to do it.
I just was funny seeing the bars with the humans behind it. It's like, oh, that's where the people who don't want to get hurt stand.
Yeah, exactly. All of you, we're going to all get back here. Okay, when you're ready to let them out, just go ahead. We'll be back here. Yeah.
It's funny.
It is kind of neat, though, because when you let a horse out of the gentling chute and they have a halter on for the first time and they have testicles, you think, oh my gosh, like what is going to keep this horse from just coming and attacking me? And I think that's my biggest fear when you bring a horse into an open environment. But they really, I mean, flight is just a number one on their list. It's not fight. And then once they learn, because by the end of that session, actually, he was quite good. Pick up the rope, he walks towards you, you give, you know, like pick up the rein, to put pressure on it, they give, you give back. So it's kind of interesting to see how quickly they learn that. But man, oh God, they do not like it at first.
Well, Jennifer, what is coming up on today's show?
Coming up on today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, following the fun-filled romp through the weekend's competition results and adventure co-host adventures, we will be joined by equine photographer Carl Sims, who has an interesting backstory, and the wacky world of Horse Nation finds Leslie bringing on Katie Willings, the woman with the best job title ever, Chief of Adventures. That's right, so stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate that. Daily Winnie time. Well, my Daily Winnie, we have to do an update here and give some thank yous out to new auditors. Been quite a few in the last couple of weeks. We have Carol Liptak, Nana Erickson, Melissa Aquino, and Aquino. I swear these people signed up just to hear me butcher their names. Mary Schmidt, Liz Muller, Peggy Scirocco. And also a big thanks to Celeste Coulter and Jody Becker for increasing their pledges.
I apologize. Please do not withdraw your auditor money because he just butchered
your
name.
You can take pride that your name has been butchered by America's Horse Husband. Take pride in that, people. And thank you so much. If you're not part of the Auditor Facebook page yet, just search for HRN Auditor and request to join, and we'll let you in. I can't always find all of you on Facebook. The name you sign up with on Patreon is not always the name you use on Facebook, so I can't find you to add you. So please do find it. You do want to be part of the HRN Auditor page for sure. And we will be doing another assignment of products for review this week. So be sure to get that in quickly. You want to be part of that.
I posted a photo in the auditor room this morning. It's pretty funny. So it's to all my chicken loving sisters. My Daily Winnie goes out to somebody whose birthday is today, Debbie Laux, the host of Horsemanship Radio and Monty's daughter. She's going to be here in a little while. Bless her heart, she's coming on her birthday to the farm. And it's kind of a special birthday. It's one of the ones that end in zero. So we'll have to figure 30? Out something. No, Glenn, unfortunately, she's 40.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
20. Let's go 20.
You know,
it's 20. The new 20.
My sister-in-law is also this week and also is that same birthday that she has, the same zero. So I just talked to her.
So what are you
yesterday.
Doing? Well, I need to figure out. I mean, like,
yeah, aren't you supposed to be having a big party for her or something?
Aren't you supposed to be sending me money to take her out to dinner?
Oh, that's right. Well, we never did finally decide on what was going to happen there. So you just let me know what you decide. She's not going to want to be anywhere near your sick ass today. So
here, happy birthday.
Yeah, here, have this. Well, let's do this for her. This is free. We'll give her this.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy, happy birthday to you.
Little chili love.
That's right. Little chili love for her birthday. Yeah. Well, that's good. Happy birthday, Debbie. That's very exciting. You know, any birthday when you get to be our age that you have is a good one. So that means you're still here.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, we had We had the fork over the weekend. Remember, we talked to Samantha for a little while before we lost her on Friday morning. She was out at Tryon International Equestrian Center, which is going to be the home for the 2018 World Equestrian Games. And the fork was there. And that is up to a three-star event. It's a pretty much a lead-up event. Like, we're going to be talking a little bit later here about the lead-up races for the Kentucky Derby. Well, this was kind of like the lead-up event for Rolex. Yes. And I have some results. You want to hear them?
I do.
Okay, we have Marilyn Little, the crossover show jumper on RF Scandalous. She led the CIC three-star at Tryon from start to finish. She added 6 cross-country time penalties to her dressage score to win on a 47.7 and to take home a good piece of a $20,000 prize. Yeah, I know. Money in eventing. Amazing. So
she still had a rail in hand, too, from second place. She just killed it.
Kitty is the horse's nickname, and it looks like Kitty will be heading off to Rolex. So that was good. Doug Payne came in second on Vandiver.
Vandiver,
is that how you say it? He has a funny nickname, too, and I can't remember what it is. Kim Severson on Cooley Cross Border. Carolyn Martin on The Apprentice. Of course, we've heard about The Apprentice for many years now. And Philip Dutton had 3 spots in the top 10. So we'll be seeing, I'm sure, one of those many horses at Rolex.
It's Fernhill something.
Yeah,
you'll see
it's always Fernhill. Wait a minute. His number 9 horse was I'm So Ready. S-E-W. I'm So Ready. So no Fernhill on that one.
Gotta be off the track thoroughbred.
Yeah, true. Selena O'Hanlon was in there, Sharon White. So all the names we'll be seeing at Rolex. Plus, there were a couple of advanced divisions. Do you understand the advanced A and the advanced B division?
Yes,
okay,
I do.
Okay, explain that to me.
So the CICs and the CCIs, the ones with the stars,
yeah,
those are longer and harder.
Okay.
And so the advanced division is just like regular, an advanced 3-day, as opposed to putting the FEI division into it. So you've got the difference in advanced A and advanced B is they just had to split the entries because there were so many advanced entries. The 3-star is the people who are like, we're going to, you know, hammer down and we're going to go for it. And it's longer and it's harder. And the advanced division is like a bit shorter. You know, maybe it's a horse that's not quite ready for a 3-star. So it's just the regular advanced.
What I found interesting was a couple of the horses we're going to talk about are actually going to Rolex, and they were in the advanced. Is that because maybe they just didn't want to run them as hard?
Yeah, it just depends on kind of where they're at in their fitness and in their training and kind of what they have to prove. If all they're going for is a clear round to qualify for Rolex, then just go in the advanced, you know. But if you're looking to win the part of the $20,000 and your horse is super ready and you know you're ready, or you're already qualified for Rolex, maybe you go in the 3-star.
Okay, got it. Well, one of our hosts here on the Horse Radio Network, Liz Halliday Sharp, did very well on Blackie. She did, get this, she did 3 foot perfect phases to win the advanced A division, scoring a 25.9 to take the early lead after dressage. Yes, you heard that correct. They held a position with a double clear show jumping round and just put in a couple of time penalties to end on a 34.3, and they're bound for a Rolex. So 34.3 at your end score is pretty damn good in this level of
event. 25 in an advanced dressage. Dressage test is insanity.
I know. She is that horse is good. And Jennifer, you hear her talk all the time. Was this one of the horses she talks about a good bit? Blackie?
He is kind of one of the favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of sorta.
Yeah. I
would
say.
And his name is Blackie.
She gets all googly and gushy when she talks about Blackie.
Yeah.
His name is Blackie. That's the greatest.
You know, we got to be proud of our hosts here, too, right? When one of the hosts kicks up. And so we'll be seeing Blackie at Rolex and rooting for Blackie for sure. And then there's our friend Jessica Phoenix, who was there with 4 horses in the advanced divisions, of course, because, you know. It's Jessica. She did come off of one of them, but then did pretty well on some others, got back on, and Jessica bounces. She doesn't seem to break, knock on wood. A highlight for Jessica will have been Bentley's Best win in the advanced B division. 10-year-old Chicaner, owned by Don Good, scored a 34.6 in dressage, added a single show jumping time penalty, and then powered around cross country with 8.8 seconds to add to a win of 44.4. So Bentley's Best is one that I think we'll be seeing at Rolex with one of, I don't know, what she entered, about 12? Her and
now, I think it's funny that you say she doesn't break, she only bounces, because I'm pretty sure Jessica's broken about everything.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, you know, lately she's been bouncing. I think the better these vests get, the less people break.
Another one was Zara Tyndall and High Kingdom, our dear, sweet Zara, who's over in England. She was at the Weston Park Horse Trials. She won the advanced. And she got a dressage score of 29.9 and then had some time penalties and finished on a 35, a career best final score and a sign of good things to come because she's heading to Rolex too.
Well, she's going to have to compete because it's been announced that Mikhail Young is bringing two this year. So he's not happy just winning first. He wants first and second. So there you go. We'll see. He's going to obviously be the one to beat. He kind of likes coming to Rolex and winning and taking the money home with him.
Yeah. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah. All right. There's another thing that we need to talk about, and that's we haven't talked much about the Derby prep. And this weekend was a good weekend for Derby prep. Jennifer and I watched some of the races on Saturday. It was on NBC. So we're going to talk about four of them here. And I have the clips of just the ends of the race as they're coming around to turn because there were just too many to play all of them. But we're kind of doing this to give you an idea of the names you're going to hear coming into the Derby. You know, we're starting to really flush out who's going to be there and who's, you know, who's peaking right now. And we wanted to just share some of those names with you and some of the excitement from the weekend.
Can I just say something that's really amazing is I was in the kitchen with Pat Roberts, Monty Roberts' wife. We're watching the Santa Anita Derby. And I'm like, there's just no better combination than John Sheriffs, the Mosses, former owner, you know, owners of Zenyatta, trainer of Zenyatta, John Sheriffs, and Victor Espinoza as the jockey. I was like, this has got to happen. Gormley's got to win this race.
Well, let's listen.
Hold on. Oh. Do you know what Pat says to me? She was like, this is such an amazing race. You know, we won it in 1976.
Huh.
What? I'm watching the race with somebody who's won it before. How cool is that? That was one of those life moments where you're like, oh my God, this is awesome. Right now is awesome. So let's hear the race.
I didn't know
from American Anthem. Gormley is being presented three wide within a length of them, swinging for home, and then Midnight Pleasure. Iliad and Reach the Stars coming with very wide bids. Less than 3/16 to go. Battle of Midway from Royal Mo. And here comes Gormley, followed by Iliad and Reach the World. It's Battle of Midway trying to stave off the Moss pair. Royal Mo and Gormley battling strongly. Gormley looming into the lead now. Gormley takes the lead. And Gormley wins the Santa Anita Derby. A half length of Battle of Midway. Yeah. Royal Mo and Reach the World finished fourth just in front of Iliad.
I would have not got the trifecta because I was actually picking Royal Mo in there too, because it's another Jerry and Ann Moss and John Sheriff's horse, but it was just an awesome race. And Gormley just, he had like a surge coming around the backside, coming around the home turn. And then he just surged again coming towards the finish line. It was awesome.
He's named after a British sculptor named Anthony Gormley. So that's
weird.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird name for a racehorse, and I was wondering why, but that's how he got the name. You know, so we'll see a couple of those, I think. The one thing about the Santa Anita Derby is Jennifer and I watched it live when it was on Saturday, and I was watching the race, and I said, Jennifer, this race is taking forever. It was slow. It was a slow, slogging race. They did not break any records in the Santa Anita Derby this weekend.
All you have to do, Glenn, is be the fastest of the slow horses.
It just was like, oh my God. And she said, yeah, it does seem slow. And then when they announced it at the end, and it was like, it was a slow race. Now, the Wood Memorial was over the weekend as well. And anything to say about that before we listen?
No, because I didn't get to watch that one. So I can't wait to hear.
Okay, here we go.
Cloud computing is 2.5 lengths behind and output to the whip as they come toward the top of the stretch. It is Battalion Runner and Irish War Cry. 3/4 in 1:11.4, they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry on the outside, it's got a neck in front. Battalion Runner all out, second on the inside, 4 lengths back to Cloud Computing. Irish War Cry's in front because they come to the final 16th. Battalion Runner's not going with him. Then comes Cloud Computing down to the line. Irish War Cry has won the Wood Memorial under Rajiv Mirage.
Can I just say Irish War Cry is a great name for a horse?
That is a good, that is a great racehorse name.
And that's a Grand Motion horse bred. It was a Curlin, actually, a New Jersey bred colt by Curlin. Started his career 3-for-3 before finishing 7th place in the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth on March the 4th at Gulfstream Park. So coming to win this race was a bit of a surprise and really a comeback for this horse. So I think this is going to be one to watch.
There's certainly not an American Pharoah type standout. You know, you had American Pharoah and Dortmund, which were like the two big names going into the Derby 2 years ago. And then Nyquist last year, everybody was talking about Nyquist, but this Bluegrass Stakes was really exciting because you're like, there's, you know, you never pick a long shot at Keeneland. You just don't. Because they never win. But let's listen to the Bluegrass Stakes.
Well, one thing on Dortmund, you just mentioned Dortmund. Did you see that Dortmund's being retired to stud?
I did. And did you see who was commenting about Dortmund retiring?
No.
Who was being quoted? Art Sherman. Well, I'm like, Art Sherman was in training Dortmund. I guess in December, they sent Dortmund to his, they like fired Bob Baffert and then moved him over to Art Sherman.
Ah, I didn't know that. He's going to be a stallion. What barn did it say? Doesn't 1.9 million was his earnings. Did you think he earned more than that? Seemed like he did, but
I don't know. He just always came in second and third. Yeah. He is going to, I'll think of it in a second.
Yeah. I can't remember either. Anyway. So now we're going to take a look at which one were we up to? Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland over the weekend.
They can do. They've got to catch Longshot. I-Rap at the top of the stretch. Who leads it by 2 lengths? Practical Joke second. McCracken third. Taprit fourth on the outside. J-Boy's Echo in fifth. Here's McCracken storming up on the outside. I-Rap is fighting on, and Practical Joke is in between those two. Final furlong of the toy on the Bluegrass. I-Rap with the lead. Practical Joke giving all he's got. I-Rap 31-1. Wins the toy on the Bluegrass with Julianne Leperoux aboard.
31-1. That is a huge long shot for Keeneland. And this horse was 0-for-7.
Like that hadn't come in the top three ever.
How did he qualify for the race? I don't know.
I don't know how he ended up in a stakes race. He should have been a claimer about $5,000.
They must have seen something. I don't know how I qualified, but congrats to him.
Yeah, which, by the way, puts him automatically into the Kentucky Derby.
Then.
So, I mean, that was the only way this horse was getting the Kentucky Derby, was winning a big stakes race like this one. That's trainer Doug O'Neill. And we saw a little bit of an interview with Doug, who just said, you know, we weren't giving up on this horse. And of course, Doug O'Neill won last year with Nyquist and 5 years ago with I'll Have Another. So he knows a little bit about spotting horses that are kind of on the long shot side. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, I need to get some water. You guys talk about yourselves.
All right. So that's kind of a look at the prep races for the Kentucky Derby over the weekend. There was another one, and we'll let Jamie introduce this one. There was a Santa Anita Oaks, which a filly that popped into the mix, but we'll be keeping an eye on that. And of course, covering the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown races more as time goes on. We'll have some guests for you coming up here as well. One bit of a sad note, Suffolk Downs, which is in Boston, in Massachusetts, right outside or right in Boston. I can't remember. Did we ever go to Suffolk Downs when we lived up there, Jennifer?
No, we did not.
I didn't. You know, how did we miss going to Suffolk Downs? I don't know. It's in Revere.
It closed. I think it closed before we even moved back down here.
Well, they approved
the, way out,
the sale of the 161-acre property, and it is going to, let's just, all they would say in the article is that, and of course I have ads popping up in the way, all they would say in the article is that they have no interest in running a racetrack. It was supposed to get gambling.
It was not financially viable before they bought it.
Why would
they revisit that?
It was eyed as a place for a casino, you know, because that's what happens at racetracks, but it never got the casino. The casino went somewhere else, and it just ended up selling to this construction company who's going to build something else there, and it's not going to be racing. So that's another racetrack goes away. Suffolk Downs in Massachusetts. It's the last racetrack in Massachusetts.
I didn't realize it was even in Massachusetts.
Yep. So that's going away. Do you want to talk about this one last race with the filly?
Yes, please. Because we always talk about the Derby and we don't really mention the Kentucky Oaks all that much, there's a filly that's just killing them out here on the West Coast, and her name is Paradise Woods. She was in the same barn as Beholder. She was a stablemate of Beholder, who's been retired now. It's a Richard Mandela trained filly. Let's hear the end of this race. Now, this is the Santa Anita Oaks.
Then majestic quality in the green cap from It Is Well, and Abel Tasman on the extreme outside, getting forced very wide, 8 lengths off the lead. Paradise Woods has slipped away by 6 lengths. The others are in a line at the eighth pole, with Abel Tasman running home fairly well into second. But the masterful Mandela has produced Paradise Woods at start number 3 to a dazzling victory in the Santa Anita Oaks. She wins by a dozen lengths from Abel.
12 she links.
She was gone. There was nobody
he
even
didn't have
close.
Anything to say. Yeah, he had like nothing to say. He's like, and she won. I mean, I think she had not even crossed the finish line before. He's like, yeah, and she wins. It was amazing. So keep Paradise Woods in your...
Now, is she qualified for the Derby at this point?
Yes, she is. No, she's qualified for the Oaks. They're pointing her to the Oaks. I don't know what she qualified for, but they're pointing her to the Oaks.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. Well, and, you know, racing has started over at Keeneland, and I saw some pictures from friends who have gone out and they're having a good time there, and the crowds are as big as ever, Jamie. The crowds are
crazy big. And they're just Keeneland. Getting drunk. They're not betting.
That's right. Oh, is that right? Is that the report you saw?
The handle was down, but it was like a record crowd for the bluegrass this weekend.
Well, I can tell you that we had while Jennifer's getting our first guest on, we had a chance to head out while you were in bed yesterday. It was such a beautiful weekend here, and we know that they're going to come to an end shortly, and we're going to be at 100 degrees. So we took the opportunity to put the ponies in the trailer and take them over to the Florida Horse Park again.
Oh.
I was telling Jennifer, going to the Florida Horse Park, you know, it's the same park every time you go, but it's a completely different place every time you go because there's always a dozen different things going on. Remember the last time we had the reggae concert at about 100 decibels?
Mm-hmm.
And we had the Yahoos that were set up beside us who were racing their horses back and forth and, you know, causing every other horse in the park to freak out. Well, this time we had a paint show. We had a driving show, including some very scary minis driving. We had a kind of an obstacle show. We had a dressage show and a 5K run all on Sunday at the Florida Horse Park, and a bunch of trail riders.
Is a paint show much like watching paint dry?
I never did see the paints. They were all the way on the other side. I saw the paint horses, but I didn't see them doing anything. They were kind of in the covered arena, so we didn't see them. We saw the carriage drivers. They were doing dressage and then this kind of obstacle thing. And, you know, this was the first time that we had Scooter out anywhere where he saw other carriages. So that was interesting.
How was that?
Yeah, he thought they were pretty fascinating. He was terrified by the minis and carriages. As a lot of horses are, you know, minis scare horses for some reason. But there were a lot of minis there and carriages. So it was an interesting experience. We drove them and she rode Nigel, who was a saint. They were both saints. We drove and rode them through the middle of everything. And they were good. There were some really cute Hackneys there. And a lot of fjords. There were two pairs of fjords, which you don't see too often at competitions. So that was kind of neat to see. But it was a beautiful day. We didn't have any trouble. Jennifer said, you know, we have nothing to talk about the show tomorrow because it all went great. So it was
good. That's a good thing, Jennifer.
Yeah. We drove them through the woods, too. It's the first time we've taken Scooter in the woods. And you can go in the woods a good ways there to Florida Horse Park. And it's sort of a trail. So when we started down it, we weren't sure the cart was going to be able to get through it. You guys riding, you can go anywhere. The cart, you know, we did come across about an 8-inch log, and I had no choice. So I was like, Scooter, okay, we're going over. But that's why I have an off-road vehicle. So we went over the log, which is not comfortable, by the way. But he was a trooper. He just went through he didn't care. He loves that stuff. So yeah, we had a good day. It was a fun day, and there was just so much happening. It is kind of neat to live 35 minutes from a place like that to be able to go out, and a place like that that allows you to come out and just trail ride, you know, in the midst of everything else that goes on. There's a big...
Sounds like a Masterson Station in Lexington.
It is. Aww. It is, only bigger. You know, it's a bigger place than Masterson. And
no prison next door?
No prison next door. That's right. Masterson actually has like three prisons next door. They have a whole bunch of prisons at Masterson. Well, let's talk a little bit about Omega Alpha Equine. And Jennifer, I know that we use some of Omega Alpha products. Talk about that.
Omega Alpha products feature prominently on the supplement shelf here at our place. Scooter has a little bit of an allergy issue, especially if he has to spend any time
like
in the barn and he gets to coughing. So we use the Respifree for Scooter, and it just does the trick. He doesn't cough. He doesn't hack. It doesn't bother him. And it's nice because it doesn't just cover up the cough. It helps him to get rid of the phlegm. In other words, get rid of the stuff that's making him cough.
What's that called?
It's actually good for him.
And, I'm going to take that. What is it?
Respifree.
All right,
you need it right now.
I know.
Yes, you need some right now. It is awesome. And the best part is Scooter freaking loves it. If he sees me putting it in the syringe, he'll walk over to me and stick his nose out and grab the syringe.
Really?
He loves that stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great.
I'm not sure why, but he does. He loves it.
And gets it right under control if he starts to cough, like if we have really dry weather and he starts to cough a little bit because he likes to play in the dust a lot in the paddock. Give him a dose, and usually by the second dose, he's got it under control, and by the third or fourth dose, no cough, and he's in good shape.
Now, I've got Zeus, since I brought him here, on the Biotic 8 because it's a top quality probiotic, and they have those daily serving packets that basically it's super fresh because you're opening up the packet and putting it in directly to their food. So it's really cool. It helps protect bacteria from stomach acid. They get the good bacteria, reaches the gut and hindgut. All the micronutrients are in there, and that's Biotic 8, and they have the serving packets.
Very good. You can find all of that.
That's a brilliant idea, by the way.
I know. It's so awesome. You don't have to, like, you don't lose any of it, scooping it out, and the wind blows it away. And that is the stuff that it promotes their healthy digestive tract, puts all the bacteria and gut flora in there. It's got digestive enzymes. It's awesome stuff.
We're going to be seeing them. They're always set up at Rolex. So I know that if you're heading off to Rolex, you'll find Omega Alpha Equine. Or if you're not heading to Rolex, then look for them at OmegaAlphaEquine.com. Now, Jamie's going to bail out on us here. Your voice is getting worse, not better. So.
I know. I'm sorry, you guys.
That's all right. Well, we'll talk to you again on Wednesday. Hopefully, you'll be feeling a little better, and be safe with those babies you're training.
You know what? I made it through half the show, less than half the show, so you can pay me less than half.
I think we can figure that out. All right. Get better by Wednesday.
Thanks, guys. Right, bye. You, I'm Jamie. Sorry. Spay, neuter, gal.
Well, our first guest today has an interesting story, and that's why we wanted to get him on. We first saw it on thehorseaholic.com, and we thank them for bringing Carl's story out. His name is Carl Sims, and, you know, his story goes back a little ways, and I kind of want him to tell it. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Now, Carl, you're a photographer, an equine photographer, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
And also in college.
Yes, sir, I attend Blaine College here in College Station. And I tend to apply. I plan on applying to go to A&M University within a year. I just financially, it's easier for me to start at the junior college and then apply for A&M.
And what state?
I'm in Texas.
Texas. Okay, that's what I thought. Now, I think that, you know, the part of the Horseaholic.com article really focused on, and I think it was a great story, is how you got your first horse. Were you always interested in horses as a little kid, or how did your family have horses?
I was born with a horse bug. I think it's a thing that you either have it or you just fall in love with it. I mean, I've had a passion for horses since I was a child. I used to, for my birthday, any event, anything like that, I would always request farm animals and horses, especially to play with, you know, and I had those as a toys growing up. And my dad, he spoiled me. I was the only boy. And he, before him and my mom got divorced, we had a little farm in the backyard and we had billy goats, cows, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, every chance we got to go around a horse, you know, I loved it. It was something I had a great passion for it. And once my dad left us and everything got sold, I still kept that passion and love for it. So everywhere I've seen a horse or anything, you know, I freaked out. It was just amazing. And I've always wanted one since I was a child.
How old were you when your dad left?
My dad left us when left me and my mother and my siblings when I was around five. And I'm one of his only child from my mom. So, and my mom was a single mother and she had a little drug problem. She's addicted to like pain medications and stuff. So she wasn't, you know, she was a great mother overall, you know, but she just wasn't there completely 100%, you know. And I have four other siblings and they're all older. And so I was the youngest one, and I mean, I have an old soul, pretty much everyone tells me, and I act way beyond my age. So I was very, very independent at a young age. I started cooking for myself, everything at a young age. So, you know, by the grace of God, I didn't really go down the wrong track or anything.
Well, now, and so that meant if you were going to get a horse, you know, as a young teenager or preteen, you were going to have to do it yourself, right?
Yes, sir. Everything that deals with horses, I had to do myself. And so how I got to that, I met a friend at school. And when I met my friend at school, she was telling me, you know, yeah, we have pigs and stuff like that at our place and stuff. And her dad happened to be a youth minister. And so I met them and hung out with them, and he tried to give me a show of pigs, and I really just didn't have a passion for pigs. Well, people would just go and take him horses that they didn't want anymore because they had a lot of land, and he would just open up his, you know, pastures and feed them here and there and let them graze for free. And that was this one bay horse, big, tall bay horse, and he was very malnutrition. He was very skittish, looked like he got into an accident. I'll never forget, he had like a lion scratch on the side of his hip. And that's where I got the name King from Lion King, and the lion scratched him. That was just my thing as a child. And so I was hanging out with them and stuff like that. And I got to, I mean, you know, I asked him about the horse and he said he just won't let anyone touch him. He was just crazy. He was afraid of people and everything. So I worked at it and I worked at it and I worked at it. And finally, I caught him. And prior, you know, I haven't had any hands-on experience with horses at all. So this is kind of dangerous, but, you know, it was something that I had to do. So I caught him and I put him in the stall and everything. And I went and I worked with him. I slept in that stall with him before, or, you know, and just got him to get very, very, very used to me. I would go, and at this time, it was about 7th grade. I was in school. I was in junior high at this time, and I started taking pictures of all my friends, and everyone thought it was so cool that I took pictures. So I started charging people $20 for photo shoots and stuff, so they would tell their parents. And, you know, when I first started, this is my first starting in photography. Their parents would come and pick me up because we didn't have a car and stuff. So their parents would pick me up and take me to go do their child's photo shoot or their family photo shoot. And from there, it grew. It grew tremendously. And so my friend's dad, he didn't really charge me anything at first, you know, to keep the horse and stuff like that. He just told me, yeah, it's yours. You can deal with him and everything. They had saddles. And I was a big fan of Clinton Anderson and his method. So I watched YouTube videos because I couldn't afford the software. So I would watch YouTube videos. And I'm watching these YouTube videos and I'm trying to figure out how to make this horse love me. That was my ultimate goal. So he ended up coming around very well. And he started coming around and I eventually got the saddle on his back. And from there, we grew an unlimited bond that was just phenomenal. I mean, this horse, everyone was in wow because this horse wouldn't let anyone touch him, anything. I would groom him every day, and stuff like that. And he became very attached to me. And at that time in my life, it was a very hard time because my mother ended up getting in trouble, and going in and out of jail. So, they kind of took me on there and I lived with them for a while. So he got to be in the backyard for me and everything. So we definitely grew and times was hard. And as a kid, I would go in the stall. I was about 11, 12 then. I would go in the stall and just cry with him, and he'll just sit there, and be there for me. And so CPS took custody of me, and we departed. I couldn't see him for a while. It was like 3 or 4 years went by, and I didn't see this horse anymore, and I was worried. I would call and ask how he's doing, and they'll say, yeah, he's all right. You just put him back in the pasture. He's fine. He's doing good. And I just knew that's not what I wanted. So then my mother ended up getting a little bit back on track and got out of jail and went through classes and got custody of me again. And sure enough, I found my way back there. But then this time I had to pay for him. They told me, well, we can't really afford, to let you have him and stuff because we sold him to someone else. And I was heartbroken. And I was like, I'll do whatever it takes to get this horse back. I still played with him, and a guy who brought him never really came and seen him. And because they just didn't have that bond. So I got the guy's number and I called. He said, just give me $300 and you can have him. So I was like, okay, it'll take me a while, but I'll get it. He said, when you get it, you just give me a call. Well, I started doing photo shoots. I went mowing lawns and everything. And I saved up about 150 and I said to him, I said, hey, can I give you this right now just to start being able to save mine and working with them and stuff? He said, sure. So I gave him that and I started working and everything. I was like, it's going to take me a little bit because I'm going to buy him feed and everything. He said, okay. So finally I got him paid off and he was mine again. And by that time it was the summer. I was a freshman in high school. And I was like, they were going to start charging me board because they started taking in outside horses and stuff. So by that time I was getting them, fit and everything. And, he was looking nice and looking good. And it was the summer. So I called my grandmother, and my grandmother has Alzheimer's, and she'll be 89 this year. And she was around 85 at the time. So I called her and I asked her, I said, Mama, can I come live with you for the summer and bring my horse? Because she had a paddock in the back with just a little lean-to. And she said, sure. So I went there. And during the time that I lived with her, he looked his best. I mean, on my Facebook page, you can see it's on one of my future photos. He looks the best. And it was in the pasture right across from my grandmother's house. I would ride this horse down the road, which is, I know, it's kind of unsafe, but I was young. I was a novice amateur.
Oh, we all do it.
Horseman at the time.
We still do it.
and so I was going down the road, and my favorite thing was, because she lives in the country, was ride down the canal and ride through hay fields and this and that. And this was so crazy because this horse was so crazy, so shooken up and didn't understand people anymore and stuff. And he became an ultimate bond to me. And it was just phenomenal. And my grandmother would come out and watch us. And my dad, he wasn't in my life still. He chose a woman over us, over me, because I'm his only child from my mom. And he chose the woman over me. And so I lived right around the corner from him and didn't really spend time with him. And he ended up hating horses because he just didn't get anywhere with them. And so he didn't like the way that I am with them. And so I just didn't really fool with them anymore. And like I said, I would take that horse everywhere. And he became the best broke course that it was possible. Like, you know, I would let kids get on them and ride them and stuff like that. And so,
you know, we often,
from there, you know, Carl, grandmother,
we often say that horses come into people's lives when they need them. You know, that either one, the horse needs you, and two, you need the horse, and that's when a horse will show up in your life. And that sounded like the case with King.
Yes, most definitely. I truly believe it. And long story short, I took care of my grandmother. You know, she has Alzheimer's, and no one really spent time with her as well. You know, and it all worked out. I didn't have to pay for him to be anywhere, so I could really feed him right. And my grandmother, like, she has Alzheimer's, and my aunt, she lived in the house with her two kids, and they really didn't take care of her and spend time with her. They would always leave and leave her at home because she has Alzheimer's. So sometimes she was mean and stuff. So I really just, you know, got an understanding, and I read about it online. I taught her how to take care of her medicine, take her medicine and stuff again. And I even bit the bullet to teach her how to take a bath. She was afraid of water. So they really didn't take the time to, you know, before I came there, they didn't take the time. And, you know, when it got really bad, and I would cook for her, and we would sit there, we'll go eat our plates outside under the pecan tree, right where King was, and he would be there. And, you know, it was just, that part was a really good time in my life. And I really thank God for that part. But unfortunately, I ended up looking and getting into stuff online, and I wanted to go farther. Like, I wanted to start competing with him. And there was no way to go to compete with them. And so I attempted teaching them how to rope, and I taught them how to rope because my cousin, you know, my cousin on my grandmother's side, I really didn't know him that well, but he's a trainer. He trains roping horses, and he lived in the same town. So I got to know him while I was living with my grandmother, and I would ride King to his ranch, and he taught us how to track cows and everything. And King was had a really good heart at that, and he liked it. And we didn't know what King was bred, how he was bred, or whatever he was. He was just a really nice bay, you know. And so we got him going really good, and someone offered me some really good money. And at the time, I you know, it took a while for me to depart. I turned it down at first, you know, because, and I really prayed about it, and I felt like it was the right thing to do. And now King is still roping, and he's in a good home. And I ended up buying my first halter horse. And that's how I brought that horse. And now I'm competing in APHA right now.
Well, congratulations for that. Boy, you've come a long way. Now, tell me, where would you have been without having that horse in your life? Would you have been down your mom's road?
No, I mean, I always told myself I was coming up because it wasn't just my mom. It was my two brothers. They're addicted to drugs as well. And I grew up around that. And it was just so dramatic all the time, everything. And, you know, my dad wasn't there. So I always told myself, whatever it was, I'm not going to be that. I don't want to never be that way. I want to be successful. And I'm the first boy in my family to graduate high school and the first one in my family to continue education and go off to college.
Wow.
And
that's so cool.
So, and
you have to be,
it on my own.
How proud could you be of that? I mean, that is very cool. And you have a business. And I was looking at your photography, by the way. People can see it at csimsphotography.com. We'll post a link to that on our Facebook page as well. But your photography is terrific.
Thank you. And that's a God-given talent. I mean, everyone told me, like, this weekend I was at a horse show and I finally kicked it off and I had set up a table and everything. And I think we made a pretty good profit from it this weekend. But everyone's like, you just have to have that eye to be able to take pictures of horses because they're one of the hardest creatures to capture.
You know, it's an art. Photography is an art. You know, it is an art. And I believe that you can learn a little bit about photography, but I think the really good photographers have that innate ability.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just something of mine that I just absolutely love. That it's just something when I'm to be able to put two of my passions together, I'm the happiest man in the world. I could be the brokest kid in the world, brokest college kid, but with two of my passions together, I'm happy. And so, you know, I really want to proceed my business. I plan to be able to be a traveling photographer and travel across the world to different people, ranches, different styles of horses, be a very diverse photographer. Because here in Texas, there's a few big photographers, but they just focus on show horses or rodeo horses. But, you know, you still have your Arab, you still have your, you know, your dress horses, all your horses in different disciplines. And I would love to be able to capture those as well and be in that industry with them as well as, you know, what's in my area.
Well,
so I'm looking that's at one of my ultimate goals.
I'm looking at your photography, and it is very, very good. And we've seen a lot of it over the years. We'll post a link to that on our Facebook page. And congratulations for one, sticking with King and rescuing King and making King into something that so he was leading a fulfilling life. And then also, you know, doing what you did for yourself and horses, boy, they are the ultimate healer and the ones who can get us through in the darkest of times. And, you know, and that's happened for you too. Good luck in your career here coming up. Good luck at college. And you're still doing photography in Texas. Is that the where people can look for you now if they're in the Texas area?
Yes, I'm in Texas. I'm traveling to Idaho in September. I'm going to Georgia in 2 weeks to see my sister. So I'm all around. I'm trying to make my rounds. So my website is csimsphotography.com, and my Facebook page is Carl Sims Photography. And we also have an Instagram if people are on Instagram, and we just kicked that off, and it's csims photography as well on Instagram.
Very good. Thank you, Carl, for sharing your story. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, guys. It was an honor.
Well, there you go. You know, there's a kid who said, I don't want to go
down
that
path. You didn't tell me I need tissue.
I know. You know, there's a kid who said, I don't want to go down that path.
What's
I don't want to, I don't know what to, I don't want to do what the whole rest of my family did. You know, it was because of horses that happened, and also a drive to be different, you know,
he made it happen. Yeah, absolutely.
It would have been easy for him not to, you know, to just go down that same path. That would have been the easy path for him.
Yeah.
But yeah. So very good. I'm glad we got to share Carl's story today. And Jennifer, if you could post a link to his photography page on our Facebook page, that would be terrific. We're going to take a break right now for our song of the day. And we have a Good Life by Jared Rogerson. We're coming back. We have Leslie Wiley coming up with the Chief of Adventures at the Adventurists, talking about the Mongol Derby, the Rickshaw Run, the Mongol Rally, the Karas Trophy, the Monkey Run. They do all kinds of weird stuff. I want to know how they came up with the ideas to suit some of these bizarre competitions. One of them that Leslie's going to be competing in, all coming up in a few minutes.
I swear I wasn't looking. I just turned around and you were there. We spent all night talking about the things that make us shine and how we never wanted it like this. You're an angel, no doubt about it. You can see right through my disguise, and the way that you're flying's got me mesmerized. I know you're something I could never forget. So have a good life, I hardly know you at all. I may never see you again, but what a weekend, I'll miss you so much. I hope you remember my name. You could have been my best friend, but till our trails meet again, have a good life. I'm like that pack of cigarettes. I got nothing you need. So go on living your dreams, and I'll keep chasing mine. Let's don't pretend I don't have regrets. Have a good life, I hardly know you at all. I may never see you again, but what a weekend, I'll miss you so much. I hope you remember my name. You could have been my best friend, but till our trails meet again, have a good life. And call it bad timing, chalk it up to circumstance. It's over our heads and out of our hands. So have a good life, I hardly know you at all. I may never see you again, but what a weekend, I'll miss you so much. I hope you remember my name. You could have been my best friend, but till our trails meet again, have a good life.
Well, that's Jared Rogerson with Have a Good Life. You can find all of his music at jaredrogerson.com. And now, in case you weren't with us earlier in the show, Jamie was here for the first half hour, but then couldn't talk anymore because she is sick. So she bailed out. And we have Leslie Wiley joining us. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. You sound much better than Jamie, by the way. So,
oh, poor Jamie.
You sound perky and fun. So now, were you at Tryon over the weekend?
I wasn't. Oh, no, okay. I've been following it from home.
It was interesting. We had Samantha on with us on Friday morning, and she was talking about how the whole place is a construction zone. And if people want to see pictures of Tryon, and Samantha took a whole bunch of them and posted them on 2018 WEG Show Facebook page, and you'll find them over there because, of course, we're covering the WEG and all the lead up to that. We have Mark Bellissimo coming on the WEG Show this week, the big boss at Tryon, and he's going to give us an update, and we're going to get some listener questions, and we're going to find out some answers about WEG coming up.
That's very cool. They just did a summit and released some preliminary details about what they've got up their sleeve at the World Cup in Omaha last week. And right. So that'll be really neat to get to ask him questions in person.
Yeah. To follow up on some of that, they finally admitted that housing's going to be an issue. You know, they've been kind of brushing that one off like it was no big deal, but they kind of finally admitted that, you know, you're going to be staying an hour and a half away.
I have this idea though for Mark.
Yeah.
I don't know if he wants to hear it or not. Probably not. It's not very Markish, but so I'm a big connoisseur of a little music festival called the Bonnaroo Room Music Festival. I've been going for years and years and years, and somehow they managed to pack in like 100,000 people, you know, provide housing for 100,000 people. I think they should just like go straight up music festival on it. Let people camp out, like, you know, like have food and showers and then people can like either, you know, like do it, like just get, put everybody up on a big farm and then bus people into the event. And like, just, I mean, I think it'd be fun.
Well, you know, the other thing too, I thought of is, you know how the Japanese have those sleeping cubes, you know, where they have whole hotels that are nothing but like 3 foot by 3 foot sleeping cubes. You could just put 1,000 of those up. We could all be in these little sleeping cubes.
3 foot by 3 foot sleeping cubes?
Yeah. That literally is what they are. What do you think?
Yeah, like, there we go. I just imagine like a whole bunch of like a row of coffins, like just putting
that's pretty much what they look like. Jennifer and I remember that one show we saw that had them, and that's pretty much yeah. what it's like. It's these aisleways, and they have them bunked. So there's two.
Yeah, that was on that
levels.
Show with
yes.
The- Yes. Terry Bradshaw.
Yes. And they have this little curtain. William Shatner. You close the curtain. Now, I can't imagine a bunch of smelly horse people and all
that. Well, they have showers,
together.
Too.
Like, this World Equestrian Game smells, it just has this pervading scent of patchouli throughout. That's
right. Nobody's allowed to eat curry.
Asheville's like hippie central. I mean, I think they just need to go full on Appalachian flavor for.
Oh,
this,
no,
this
no,
bag.
No, they sell a lot of beans in Appalachia, and we wouldn't want that in the cubes, so that would be bad. All right, sorry, off the topic. You have a guest coming up, and let's get our guest on the line, and then we'll introduce her. And she's actually waiting for us, although she just wrote me a note and said, don't laugh, but my landlord is busy testing the fire alarms in the building. We're going to get... Katie on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Katie Willings.
Katie Willings, yeah. We've been having, you get her on, refresh, I'm doing the Mongol Derby this August, which is a 7 to 10 day, hopefully, if you're lucky, sort of suicide vacation, wherein you go some 600 miles across Mongolia, around Mongolia on semi-feral horses. It's a race. My goal is survival. And
that's your goal pretty much all the time. But Jennifer has put together a bumper for your special guests here in the lead up to the Mongol Derby. Let's hear it.
Horse Nation.
This episode is Do Try This at Home.
Leslie,
failure is always an option.
Any result's a result, that's for sure.
Or not.
There you go. All right, your guest is ready.
All right. Well, may I introduce you to Katie Willings? She is the head honcho of the Mongol Derby and other affiliated suicidal vacay race opportunities through The Adventuress. You've got a lot of them in addition to the Mongol Derby, the rickshaw run, in India, the Mongol Rally, an ice run in
Correct.
Russia,
mm-hmm.
Icarus Trophy, which I don't even understand. It takes place in the sky, I believe.
I don't understand most of these. Like
that
why?
Above you coming soon? Yes.
Monkey Run in Morocco, Monkey Run in Peru. So maybe you can tell us. So Katie, you are a kind of a hero figure for me because I pride myself on coming up with a lot of bad ideas on a regular basis in my life. But these all seem like just monumentally terrible ideas. Tell us more about how you started.
Thank you. As a sort of barbed compliment. Yeah. Well, look, I'm probably the least creative person in the company, actually. So I've worked for The Adventurous since 2010, and I was originally one of the riders on the very first Mongol Derby in 2009, and at the time was a sort of quite mediocre management consultant in London, actually. And they had quite an extensive debrief process at the end of my Derby, and I submitted quite a few ideas for, you know, some rule changes, some equipment tweaks, some format ideas, and a CV as well. And that's how I kind of ended up with the job. And it's sort of blossomed since then. So yes, I'm now involved across a whole suite of different adventures. I'm kind of the sort of ops director, really, for everything that we do. But the real ideas engine is our founder, Tom Morgan. It's kind of him coming up with the horrendous ideas. Like, we literally, you know, like, look at him through our hands on the Monday morning meeting and say, we're doing what? And then by kind of Wednesday, we've got a draft budget and a sort of a rough operational plan. And, you know, 3 months later, it actually happens. So Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a real powerful imagination there. And usually it's me kind of saying, well, that's not going to work because of this, because of that. I'm kind of the doom monger who the reality check around the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about some of the other races that you guys put on.
So, the foundation adventure, our sort of flagship, was the Mongol Rally, which was started in 2004, 2005. And it's a really simple idea. Take a very unsuitable car and drive from London all the way to Mongolia. So kind of across one third of the Earth's surface. And it's just incredible how much adventure that generates. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people have done it now. And I think they would all say it's a transformative experience. Just that number of border crossings, that distance, that hardship, that isolation, that camaraderie, all these things are sort of, it's the kind of gateway drug into the rest of what the adventurous do, because anyone can drive a car, but actually it's still an exceptional thing to attempt, and even more so to achieve. You've really got to dig in and want to get there, and be open to what's going on around you. You know, it's a very pure adventure.
Now, you said an unsuitable car. What is there a requirement for how beat up the car is? What's the car requirement?
It's not really a beaten up criterion. It's an engine size. So we ask for less than a litre, but that's actually really hard to do these days. Not many people make less than 1 litre cars. So we've relaxed it a little bit to a 1.2 litre engine. I don't actually know what that is in American.
Yeah, that's like 50 horsepower. That's a motorcycle.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a cup and a half of engine. or you can take a 125cc motorcycle if you prefer. So if it's got all mod cons and electric sensors, we shun it, basically. The car can be as old or as young as you like, because none of the cars actually stay in Mongolia, or actually the rally finishes in Russia now. So they all come back to Europe, and the owners collect them again at the end. So if you're very attached to your kind of old banger, you can bring that, or you can buy, you know, a little hatchback especially. But the whole point is that they're not going to handle the Pamir Highway or, I don't know, the potholes of Kazakhstan very easily. You're going to have to get out of your car, ask for help, get a tow, like fix what breaks, using whatever resources you have to hand, depending on, you know, how prepared you are and what you've got with you and what you can blag and what you can borrow. So there's a real, like I say, there's a real purity to the adventure element.
Mm-hmm.
I was in till fix what breaks, and then I'm out, because that would never happen. So
you say that. I think so many people think that way, and then they put themselves in that situation. It's like, well, crumbs, you know, I've got the fuel's definitely getting to the engine. Whoa, and what else could be going on? Is there a spark? You know, let's have a look at the battery. You'll find yourself actually becoming a rudimentary, mechanic under duress. And I would know, because I have done that. Like, I didn't know one end of a motorcycle from another when I first took on the ice run. And now, I mean, crumbs, I'm no expert, but if the Ural stops running, I will be able to do a quick diagnosis of why that might have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like 9 times out of 10, your first guess is right, and you fix it, and then you drive away again. And it's quite a rush, actually. You say that, Glenn, but I think you might find yourself a bit more mechanically minded when you're under duress, getting fired.
So you mentioned you'd done the ice run, which the description of that is you, an antique Russian motorcycle, and the deepest lake in the world, which I presume is frozen. which other of these races have you done?
The rickshaw run was the first thing that I did. That's the first contact that I ever had with the adventurists. So that is where you drive your own tuk-tuk across India. I ran one from Pondicherry all the way up to Shillong in Meghalaya, which is about 3,500 kilometers. What's that? 2,500 miles, I guess.
Oh my God. In a rickshaw that goes about 4 miles an hour.
No, an auto rickshaw. It's got an engine.
Oh, okay.
But an engine the size of a.
Okay. So it goes about 10 miles an hour.
There you go. That's like it. Yeah. So I drove that up some mountain hairpin passes and, you know, through jungles. And it's just the most extraordinary, liberating, brilliant experience. And a wonderful way to see India as well. I mean, I think to go at that pace and to be in a vehicle which is so authentic and so recognizable, And then to get out of it and be this, you know, strange white girl in a cowboy hat is just, it's very disarming and very, like richly rewarding for everyone, really. Like we thoroughly enjoyed being in the middle of nowhere, seeing real life in all the different Indian states going on, and how diverse it was and things. Mm-hmm. So the rickshaw run has got a really special place in my heart, and in the company. It's just, it's enduringly popular and accessible. And again, like the rally is that kind of gateway drug. People tend to get home from the rickshaw run and go, well, what else have you got? That's exactly what I did. The day that I finished the rickshaw run, the adventurers put the Mongol Derby on sale for the very first time. And I had this huge adrenaline rush. Like I just survived a ridiculous crash. Actually, we got hit by a truck on this mountain hairpin bend. And I suppose we were just like adrenaline sluiced and feeling quite bulletproof. And I said, oh yeah, horses, Mongolia. Right. Yeah, I could do that. Like I don't have many skills, but like I can, I mean, that's probably at the limit of what anyone can do, but I think I probably can. And I committed to enter, sort of just buoyed up by all this bravado around the table in the bar. And yeah, there was no going back then.
Yeah. That was a good experience. The impetus to just like keep coming back for more after, you know, you've had these sort of harrowing experiences. I don't think that's, I mean, I don't think it's normal psychological process and maybe not even healthy psychological process. What kind of personalities do you find are drawn to these adventure races?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know about psychologically healthy or unhealthy. They're definitely... there's a real spectrum of people, particularly on the Derby, actually. I think the unifying factor of horses kind of belies a real diversity of age and experience and attitude. Like some people really come to race and test themselves, and there's a kind of public-facing aspect to their Derby. And some people come for a really private, they almost want to dissolve and just be insignificant somewhere. Experience. Like people really are searching for something, and this kind of answers their call. And yeah, I think the impetus to come home and do something again, I think that actually is quite a universal human thing, that when you've prepared for something for such a long time and you've really committed to something, there is this natural, this like swell of anticlimax that follows it. And yeah, I mean, I feel bad for you, Leslie. I apologize in advance because it will hit you hard. It does everybody. Actually recovering from your Mongol Derby isn't a sort of physical, oh, you know, that's going to scab over or that bruise will fade. It's an emotional, you must let go of this enormous project which you committed to and that incredible community that you came to be a part of. And that experience that you can't really describe to anybody else. It's just so, it's such a roller coaster. It's so intense in the amplitude between when it's going well and when it's going badly, and the kind of magnitude of what you've done out there. And there's nobody watching, really. I mean, the world's watching in a way. Yes, there's a website and, you know, I'm sort of trying to get commentary and photos and such like, but it's also very private and very insular at times. I think adventure can be quite a kind of selfish
We're going to be watching, Leslie, every step of the way and reporting on every bump and bruise and everything that happens, all the fermented mare's milk and, you know, all of that. We're going to be rooting for her. Now, it's interesting you say that, though, Katie, because on Friday we had a guest in studio here who does a podcast about hiking the Appalachian Trail, and it's one of the biggest hiking podcasts out there. And he did it at the age of 60 years old, overweight and out of shape and never hiked a day in his life, and did the whole Appalachian Trail, all 2,400 miles of it. And everybody that comes on his show talks about the letdown after. And, you know, you guys are doing it over a very intense 7 to 10 days. They're doing it over 6 to 7 months. But they all talk about that letdown and how it's very hard to go back to quote unquote real life after that. So it's interesting you say that about such a short, intense experience.
I guarantee it will be a life-changing one. And it is, yeah, it is brief, I suppose, but it definitely has that intensity, and it will be that kind of bookmark in your life of that was the year that, yeah, I rode the Mongol Derby. Like, you'll never quite be the same again. I think everybody comes out better, actually. I would say there's strong parallels with a hike along the Appalachian. Like, that's a mind-blowing adventure. Mm-hmm. What a guy.
Leslie has no room for improvement, so she'll be.
Not true. And what was your own Mongol Derby experience like?
Oh, it was just, well, there was so much uncertainty. I think we'd come under a lot of scrutiny in the run-up to the race. I think it was generally regarded as the most irresponsible thing involving horses since, you know, the charge of the Light Brigade or something. And people were very upset that we were, you know, doing this and using the sort of historical throwback and kind of the cult of Genghis Khan to basically, well, they thought that lots of horses were going to die and be injured and, you know, we were unsuitable to be riding them and we were going to get attacked by wolves and we were not going to find water. And just people were very concerned that this was a bad idea. And I suppose in the context of the adventurous being all about, you know, taking unsuitable vehicles and breaking them in difficult terrain, to introduce horses into that apparent formula does sound like a very bad idea. But I mean, even from the get-go, there were really good veterinary protocols and horse welfare was right at the kind of forefront of the genesis of the event. It's just that I think in the first year, the adventurers didn't realize how important it was to be on the front foot about that and very public about it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my memories of preparing for the Derby were of fielding phone calls from angry journalists at all hours of the day and night. Training like I've never trained for anything in my life. Like I was, as I say, a management consultant in London, and I would train in the gym and run to work, and I would get the train home to my folks' house and line up a couple of horses, and then go cycling with my brother and then get the train back the next morning. And then I would ride about 6-7 horses on the bounce on the weekend and run or cycle between them. So I was sort of somewhat active continuously for the 3 months running up to it.
Okay, let's stop there, because we keep busting on Leslie that we don't think she is doing enough at this point.
What?
To prepare.
So that's not true. I eat a lot of cupcakes, but I also exercise.
Well, listen, I mean, I didn't get my place until the first week of June. So I actually got reserve listed in that first year because I was a dressage rider, and I'd been very honest on my application. I said, like, you look, I used to ride, I'm on the British team for 3 years, right? But I haven't actually sat on a horse for, you know, like 6 months now. It's kind of Christmas and birthdays if I go home to my parents. Like, I now, like I say, I live and work in London and whatever. I'm just a normal 25-year-old trying to make a way in the world. But, you know, I've got access to horsepower, and I'm pretty sure I will be able to be, you know, riding fit. And certainly skills-wise, I can ride most horses.
You can ride a Piaf and a Passage, which you probably
That's
had to
it.
Do a few times.
Half-pass. Like, they're going to half-halt like you've never seen. Just let me get my hands on them. But yeah, they rejected my application because they said, oh, she's probably quite soft. But then there were a couple of dropouts anyway, and I kept phoning the office and saying, oh, is there any, you know, what news, what news? And yeah, eventually in June, they offered a place to me. So I actually had quite a restricted period in which to train. So don't be put off, Leslie, because you've actually done it right. You're much better to bed in good, like, base level fitness than it is to just condition like crazy for 6 weeks in the run up.
Yeah, I've been training this moment for 25 years, Glenn.
Exactly.
So
I know. I'm just busting
on
you.
Remember, it's your basic horsemanship.
She's even having fermented mare's milk shipped over so she can get sick ahead of time. I'm gonna practice.
That's not true.
You might just enjoy it. I promise. It's actually depends. I mean, it really depends how you're feeling and the weather on the day. But it can be quite refreshing. There you go.
Like a Mongolian Bailey's Irish cream or something. Yeah.
Ish.
Not really. Okay.
Not really. I feel like there's a lot of potential there for, like, White Russians. I don't know.
Yes, you could totally make some cool Mongolian cocktails. I mean, they love to drink and they love to entertain. I don't know why they don't do more with their alcoholic beverages, but I mean, maybe there's a big growth market there. We should look into it.
Can I ask you about the Icarus Trophy? What is that?
Well, so paramotoring. Imagine paragliding, so with a beautiful wing over your head. But you've got an engine on your back as well. So rather than having to hike up a mountain and launch off the side and catch thermals, you can foot launch from the ground. So it's like having your own little aircraft, which you literally unpack out of a bag and take off from the field. I'm actually learning to paramotor at the moment. That's going to be my next adventure. And it's the most incredible sensation. It's like a very, very raw form of aviation. it's very free, and it's kind of nerve-wracking because you're literally dangling in this little harness and, you know, from whatever, 3,000 feet. But it's an extraordinary way to see the planet, I suppose. And, you know, you must be very tuned to the weather and the conditions and the technicalities of the actual flight. But you don't need any special licensing, which means that anyone can basically get a rig, get their kit together and kind of take off. You know, hopefully it will be a case of you wouldn't try it until you knew what you were doing. But still, anyone could enter and take part in the Icarus Trophy. You don't need to be a qualified pilot to pilot a paramotor. So that was what got my boss, Tom, excited. Like, oh God, unregulated flying. What we need is the world's longest flying race involving said unregulated flying. But actually, it's turning into a real pinnacle in the sport, which is growing quite fast, of paramotoring. It's a really quirky, inviting, brilliant community of people. And the Icarus Trophy just takes that aircraft and like completely revolutionizes what people think they can do with it. Most people who paramotor kind of, they take off from their normal like takeoff field and they'll tour around their locale and they'll meet up with friends and then, you know, their loved one will come and pick them up in a camper van and they'll go to the pub. It's a very kind of just a nice afternoon tour on a nice day, like a round of golf or something. Whereas the Icarus Trophy, no. You carry your kit with you. You survive all the way down the United States. So we start in near Glacier National Park, like up in Montana. And the finish line is right down in Mesquite, Nevada, like almost to Las Vegas. So picking a safe route, kind of airport to airport or gas station to gas station, hitchhiking to a hostel or a hotel, or indeed just camping where you land, looking after your motor, looking after yourself, getting yourself fed. It's an extraordinary adventure. And again, you come into land at a kind of small town petrol station somewhere in Idaho and mm-hmm. the whole town comes running, you know, it's like you're some sort of angel. Mm-hmm. So the Icarus Trophy, it takes a blossoming sport and it just completely transforms what people think it's about. It throws down the gauntlet. Oh, you think you can fly? Well, come and fly this.
It looks like mm-hmm. you have an airboat propeller on your back, basically. We live in Florida, so we think airboats. You know, it kind of looks like you have an airboat propeller on your back.
You've got a handkerchief over your head, and you've got a fan behind your head. It's a very raw sensation.
Do they keep going like 24 hours a day, or, you know, they fly for 12 hours and then stop and then have to pick up where they left off?
There's racing hours, so if they can start an hour before sunrise, and they can finish, I think it's half an hour after sunset. And that's partly because we track them live, and obviously the race crew needs also some downtime.
Right.
And also you can't really fly in the dark. So, they need to use daylight hours. And then the race class can only advance forward by means of flight. So if they land, they can't then, say, hitch a lift into town to refuel and take off from where they refuel. They'd have to backtrack to where they landed and take off again.
Ah, gotcha.
Now, if you're in the adventure category, we sort of don't really mind. As long as you get from start to finish safely, we think that's absolutely fine. So you can make road moves if, say, there's a mountain pass or the weather's terrible the day that you wanted to fly that. Effectively, we want everyone to get around safe, but if you really want your result to count, then, yeah, you fly every single mile. And that's hard because actually the kit, once you've got, say, 10 litres of fuel on and the paramotor and all of your survival gear, you're probably taking off with, 50, 55 kilos on your back. And you're not going anywhere without that 55 kilos of stuff because that's your life for the next 10 days. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a really tough event.
There's your next one, Leslie. There's the next one.
Don't knock it, Leslie. I promise you, I'm learning and it's pure freedom when you're up there. It really is so, very special.
You know, I was reading about it and I just had this vision of a bunch of like weirdos with paramotors like landing on the Las Vegas Strip, like, you know, in front of the
Bellagio.
Bellagio fountain.
As the event manager, that's exactly what I had in mind, them sort of coming in over the big sign. But yeah, you can't mm-hmm. really fly over populated areas. Effectively, like the aviation law says, you know, you can't, unless you've got a landing zone,
That's incredibly unsafe. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a terrible, terrible idea.
And I imagine in that race, weather is everything, right? I mean, if you hit a couple of stormy, tornado-y days, you're grounded, and it's going to be a problem. Yeah.
No, and that, you know, in that situation, being a responsible pilot is obviously the most important thing, really. Like understanding the weather systems and understanding what the conditions are doing and what effect that's going to have on your own, you know, means of flight is absolutely fundamental. So we produce a really specialized weather report every night, which all the pilots get. And yeah, one of my key crew during the event is Weather Tim, who he's a government meteorologist who sort of moonlights for us because he thinks the race is very fascinating and kind of cool. And yeah, they do need specialist knowledge and they need specialist information and they need to do the right thing with it. So that's a big part of the race, you know, knowing when you can fly and making the most of those windows.
Now, Katie, before we have to let you go, there is one thing that we are kind of concerned about with Leslie, and she's self-admitted this, is that she's directionally challenged. So what kind of thing should she be doing now to prepare to not get lost and end up in China?
Look, it's very hard for me to preach about this one because I remember as a rider, I switched my GPS on for the first time, pretty much riding up to the start line. I mean, I really was... not brilliantly prepared as a navigator, fair to say. If I can manage, I'm inclined to think that anybody can. you know, basically, you're going to start at point A and you're going to ride more or less east until you're at point B. Mm-hmm. You can't really be lost with a GPS, like as long as you've got batteries and you keep it fueled up, you can sort of follow the arrow. And I would say the more important thing is being a decent horsewoman and understanding the terrain in front of you. So you can follow the arrow and say, well, it's 5 kilometers that way, but it's a much more important consideration of like, well, what's in that 5 kilometers? So I suppose if I was to give you any advice, it would be get out there and when you're riding, try and look at distances, try and figure out how far away different landmarks are, because that's going to make your navigation much easier when you're looking down at a GPS screen and saying, well, I wonder if that's the station or I wonder if that's the river crossing. Because I can see a river or I can see a gear. But if you've got no idea how far away they are, it's really difficult to translate what you're seeing against the data that you've got in your hand. So you know, try and figure out how far out you want to navigate from and how far away, objects like scary dogs and local hills and mountains are from you. Like start guessing and then start trying to back it up with real data because that will give you a big head start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And apart from that, try not to worry too much about it. It's actually a real joy. Like, you'll probably be rubbish for the first day and a half, but you know what? You'll get the hang of it, and that's incredibly satisfying.
I'm so excited. Will I get to meet you there?
Yes. Yeah. No, I'll be there delivering the pre-race training, and I'll be in the ops room dot-watching you guys and making sure that we've got vets and stations, and if there's problems, that I've got crew going out to attend them, and that we know who's winning and how fast they're going. And, yeah, I'll be the... I mean, there is no all-seeing eye. I'll be the eye trying to see as much as is humanly possible.
So you're the one that's going to go out and find her crying in a puddle at the end of a long day.
Yeah. I'm sorry. And you know what's even worse? We film it now. Yeah, so we're making this adventurous TV series. So, like, the crying... is absolute TV gold. I hate to tell you, but if you find out,
Leslie's going to be a star.
It's so awful, but I'll be like,
I can ham it up.
We need to get camera A to Leslie quick. But again, I'd like to apologize in advance for, firstly, whatever comes out on Celluloid, it's for the greater good and also for the anti-climax, which will follow. It's monumental, you know, like this will be, like I say, a big bookmark in your life. And
that's
a heavy responsibility, but I'll try and make it as special as I can.
She has made it known that she has bought herself a wine bra and that's part of her outfit. So that's become a thing now with the listeners. Oh, I wasn't supposed to tell about the wine bra.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I thought it was Wonder Bra.
No.
It's a wine bra. It's like this sort of plastic, like it's like a bra, but you can fill it up with wine. And it has a little straw that comes out direct to your mouth.
Fabulous. Okay. what's your strategy there, Leslie? I mean, is that a survival?
It's survival. I would think it classifies as survival, I think. Yeah.
Yes, it does, yeah. Like a sort of airbag, really.
Multifunction. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, that's true. If you come off, it'll be a mess is what it'll be.
Oh, yeah. Probably even more of a mess. But,
I can see
in whatever fashion suits you, Leslie. I applaud it.
Oh, I can see the rescue team now when they show up and she's completely covered in red all over her front after falling off.
Wine. That's yeah. Where I'm crying in a puddle of wine.
We've all done it. Don't worry. That's just fine.
Well, this has been fun. It's theadventurous.com is where you can find all of the adventures. If you're interested in checking one out, go for it. What not? Look at Leslie. She signed up. So we're looking forward to following Leslie's adventures all along the way. And also checking out some of the other things that you guys do. It is truly fun. And look at you, the brave one. You're going to be winning the Icarus Trophy before long.
Thank you very much. That's highly unlikely, but it's very nice of you to say so.
Thank you, Katie. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good morning. Bye. Cheers.
So now, is all of this helping or hurting your psychological profile?
You know what? It's actually really been helpful because I feel like in the past few months, I've just been actively avoiding the reality of this whole situation that I've gotten myself into. And so these weekly podcast appearances have really made me face up to the inevitable truth that I've got to actually do this. So it's really been helpful.
I want you to know, we pick on you a lot because that's part of our job, right? But we're so proud of you. We really are. And, we're so proud you're doing it, not us. And then, but no, we really are. You know, I pick on you a lot. But
I really am trying. I've got I just got my GPS Garmin in and I'm going out and I'm doing a 35-mile hike on the AT, the Appalachian Trail this weekend. And I'm going to try and figure out how this direction, finding your way from point A to point B works.
Now maybe the Appalachian Trail is not a good one for that because they have little white marks about every 10 feet. So
maybe I'll just wander off into the woods and see if I can find my way back.
Great. Maybe a little beacon carry it with you. But no, we really are proud of you.
And the wine bra. I got to give the wine bra a test run too. So very important.
Well, we're looking forward to it. We'll keep talking more about the Mongol Derby as it gets closer in Leslie's segments here on Mondays. I was looking at which one of these that I could honestly see myself doing. I do not see myself in a rickshaw going across India. That just, I don't know. I don't like curry, so that would be out. But, the Mongol rally looked kind of fun. The whole driving thing, that did look kind of fun. The ice run, that's way too cold. And then there's the monkey run, which is you get on little 49cc, the scooters, the mini bikes that everybody drives around at horse shows? You get on one of those. And you go for like 3,000 miles through either Morocco or Peru, carrying everything you need with you on your back on this little scooter. First of all, that sounds a bit comfortable for about, 10 minutes?
Right.
And then after 3 hours of that, you can't walk ever again. I don't know. And that whole flying thing? No, I like flying, but I don't think I want to fly with nothing around me.
Oh, that seems like a real death trap.
Yeah, it does. Especially because you have to understand winds and things, and I never could understand that stuff. So that'd be out. we're glad you're doing it. We really are. Hey, I also wanted to mention, I did send you information this morning on this, but especially auditors asking about the cruise. We did book the date and I went over that a little bit last week, but we will have the prices for you today. We're supposed to be hearing from the travel agent today with the prices. I'm building a web page for it so that we'll be able to send everybody to the web page. We have appointed, and the first one to commit to go is our legacy listener, Rhonda. And I don't know if you know about Rhonda, but she has listened to every episode of every show we've done for the last 10 years. She has listened to all 6,100 episodes. episodes. She's the only one. She also is
You know, I'll be there. Sign me up.
Well, you're already on the website as leading the pub crawl, and we decided on a place that takes you to a place where there'll be lots of pubs too. Now, we also, one of the stops is going to be Nassau. And we found the only trail riding place in Nassau, and they have six horses, and they'll be able to fit 12 of us on the day we stop in Nassau. So that's going to definitely be first come, first serve. You get to ride on the beach and all of that. And they seem like very nice people. We're going to have them on the show. And then we're going to stop at the private island for the Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines. It's called Coco Cay. And then also we get to stop. You're going to love this. Guess where we stop? Think of what is the most pubs and places to drink in Florida. Southernmost point in the continental United States. Key West. I think Leslie and Denise, if she goes, who's our guest wrangler, who's been to Key West 1,000 times, are going to lead the pub crawl through Key West.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Denise. Yes. Denise
and Leslie together.
The pub crawl and shrimp fry.
Yeah, because she knows every place there is in Key West. So,
I feel like I'm already channeling my inner Jimmy Buffett for this. I'm ready.
Well, so I think it's going to be a blast. We have the date already. I sent you all that information. Mm-hmm. But we're going to put together the rates, and you'll be able to start booking this week. And they're requiring a $200 deposit, so it's not a lot of money for a deposit. The rates are very inexpensive, too, considering when you go on a cruise, once you get there, you'll have to get your own flights in or drive in or whatever. But we'll leave out of Miami, and the rate, of course, includes everything. Now, there's a stop every day, so pretty much we're using the ship as a... You don't have to get off, by the way. You can stay on the ship. But we're using the ship as a fancy hotel, and all your food's covered. You know, of course, all the meals and all that stuff's covered. Any shore excursions that you do is extra, but... Pretty much
like galloping on the beach.
Like galloping on the beach would be extra. And I've been chatting with those ladies that run that down there. And I said, boy, I wish you could handle more. She said, it's very expensive to have horses in Nassau. So that's the reason they have six and not 30. Because can you imagine what hay would cost to get shipped in?
Yeah.
So we're actually going to talk to them. I want to ask them about what it's like to keep horses on an island like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is going to be a blast. We're going to do a game show. That one day we are going to do a game show. So we'll spend about an hour and a half doing all kinds. We've been watching game shows on TV to get ideas. So we're going to do maybe the newlywed game for part of the time with a couple. You know, we're just going to do all kinds of fun stuff. Price is Right. You know, things like that. And we'll give away a whole bunch of prizes. I've always wanted to be a game show host, so that should be fun.
Price is Right.
Yeah, we'll do the Price is Right. You know, because we can have tax stuff, right, for the Price is Right? You know how they always have to guess how much the bottle of Shout is? Well, we can be guessing, you know, how much is this bit? You know, things like that. So that should be fun.
That's exciting.
Oh my gosh, I love the Price is Right.
You guys are mad geniuses.
Price is Right. Which one do we
She is really excited about the Price is Right.
I know.
Come on down.
Come on down. And then, you know what they did? Which one was the one where they opened the curtains? Was that the Price is Right? Where you picked between curtain 1 and 3, and then curtain 3 always had the donkey, you know, as the gag gift. We can't do a donkey as a gag gift. We have to think of something else, because for us, that's not a gag gift, right? Mm-hmm. That's actually something somebody would want. So we'll have to come up with something there.
I will dress up like a donkey.
Okay, there we go. That's perfect. You know what we did think of?
And kick them in the shin if they open the wrong.
Let's make a deal.
Let's make a deal. That's what that one is, where they open the curtains. Yes, you're right about that. So now the other thing that we thought of, we came up with this in the Horse Husbands episode last week, Leslie, and I haven't had a chance to talk to you. Sorry we're going long, everybody. But I haven't had a chance to talk to Leslie. So did you see the newest craze over in Scandinavia where they're doing the hobby horse races and jumping and... courses and thing on hobby horses? Well, we thought the hobby horse pub crawl, and we can set up little jumps in the corridors of the ship.
I
not a safety hazard for the other passengers.
No, not at all.
No, for us.
A little bit.
No, I'm sure Royal Caribbean will be thrilled.
Yeah.
Do they have security on those ships?
We're gonna have to set you up with your own little wing on this ship, because Everyone thinks you're a weirdo, which I mean, admittedly, we are.
Go Spartacus! All right, that's it for today. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really are looking forward to this, Leslie. It'll be a blast.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? This is kind of, you know, you'll be coming off the Mongol Derby going to this. So this will be much easier.
Oh, yeah, much easier.
All right. Are you going to Rolex? Yes, you are going to Rolex. We're going to see you there. We wanted to remind everybody real quick, too, that we'll be doing a meetup at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at Leslie's wonderful tent for Horse Nation and Eventing Nation at their tailgate doing trivia. So we want everybody to stop by there, and we always get a crowd. So that'll be a lot of fun. Thank you, Leslie. HorseNation.com.
Bye.
All right. We'll see everybody. Have a great day, and we'll be back here tomorrow morning. What is tomorrow? Tomorrow is Endurance Day. We're following a lady. Speaking of adventures, Leslie, we're going to be chatting with a lady who's taking her horses and doing the Pacific Crest Trail, which I didn't even know you were allowed to do horses on the Pacific Crest Trail, but it goes from Mexico all the way through California, Oregon, Washington to Canada. So she's doing that with her horses, and we're going to be checking in with her. She just started in her first week, and we're going to follow her adventures all along the way. So that's coming up on tomorrow's show. Thanks, everybody. See you, Leslie.
Okay. All right, bye.
Thank you, Jennifer.